It's The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for today on a Thursday. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Yo, what up, home slice?
Oh, stop with that. You're not sounding any younger. Stop it. Stop it.
I've decided to completely change my vocabulary.
Yeah, you're embarrassing yourself
right
now.
That's the goal. That's the goal every day.
Unbelievable. It was nice out today, wasn't it? Beautiful.
Again.
What's going on, Brady? What's happening today with your Seattle Mariner t-shirt today?
I'm just enjoying life also. Another day where I'm told it's beautiful, but I've been doing nothing but staring at walls. The breaking news of the day now, even after that Sports Center within the last 60 seconds, the Patriots have re-signed left tackle Adrian Waddle, so they do have one on the roster.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Better start. Safe TB, huh?
Better start than there was, yesterday at this time.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of high hopes on that. But anyway, a couple things I want to get to.
You didn't shoot well in basketball last night. You hit a game winner.
Yeah, I did hit a game winner.
Arnie, you didn't tell me.
Arnie hit one game winner.
I don't remember not shooting that well.
You were like 3 of 10 for the day.
Was I that bad?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But you did have one game winner. And I kept trying to get you the ball because no one else would give it to you.
I know. They all freeze me out. I don't understand what's going on here.
I kept trying to give it to you, and you just didn't do enough with it.
I didn't
play particularly well at times.
And you got all frustrated yesterday.
Oh, this guy was.
Yeah.
Smack him around?
No, but I.
Just about.
This little guy,
they're always that way.
5'9", probably, was trying to guard me.
5'9".
He's trying to guard me in the post, and
okay.
that's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm 6'4.5", 6'5", and I don't care. I'm just going to take you down low, and I'm going to body you up, and I'm going to score. And then if you're going to start doing other things to try to get under my skin, that's fine. But this guy literally was just in my back with two hands pushing up against my spinal cord. I'm like, dude, if you can't guard me, then put somebody else on me. If you have to resort to this to guard me, then just put someone else on me. I'm not dealing with this and pick up hoops.
You have to come to the YMCA game next week because there's no fouls called, and Brady gets technicals all the time.
Maybe he was a chiropractor. He's just trying to help you out.
No, you have to come out next week. And film Brady at the YMCA.
All right, what's the day? Wednesday?
No, it's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday next week. You'll have to come out.
All right, I'm going to show up. I need the laughs.
A couple things I want to get to. Charles Lazarus died today.
Oh, no.
No, you don't know who he is.
Chuck.
94 years old. And interesting that he died on this, died today, I think, because.
Fascinating.
Well, no, because he was the founder of Toys R Us, which is closing and liquidating all their businesses. The stress must have been so much. I'm sure he's rich as hell, but. I was thinking about this because I called up Toys R Us in Williston.
Yes, you did. Randomly called them bug them.
Well, I wanted to see about the liquidation sale. They said they're not having it today. But I'm like, because I want to run in. There's a couple games I want to get.
Yeah.
Before they run out. If I was going to go back to my childhood, there's at least two games I want to get. I got to get Operation. I loved Operation. Brady, have you ever played Operation? That was before your
Yes, but it's boring.
Oh, no. With the what's wrong with you?
Monopoly is 100 times better.
Yep, I agree. No,
and then I have to get Scrabble, but Deluxe, where the tiles fit in and it doesn't move around the board.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I get the Deluxe Scrabble. Otherwise, I think I'm okay. I don't really need Trouble or Parcheesi. Yeah.
Trouble's a good game. Trouble's a great game.
I'd rather get Candyland.
Candyland also a good game.
Candyland's a good game. 4-year-olds, isn't it?
No.
Chutes and Ladders.
Chutes and Ladders was another one.
Is that the most frustrating game? You're there. You're there. I'm about to win. Oh, see ya.
Chutes and Ladders was great.
If you're just getting one, you're getting Monopoly, though?
I'm getting Monopoly. Yeah. But I also was a big fan of Sorry, Trouble.
Oh, Sorry was a good game.
How about Risk?
That was too complex.
Risk was our all-nighter game in the Haskell household.
Yeah.
Do you know what was the continuation of Monopoly is when they came out with the Careers, I think. I don't know if you remember what Careers was.
Mm-mm.
Well, that was a popular game.
Never
what are you talking?
The
Get out of here.
Okay,
the Monopolies. And the reason why Monopoly was so great, not only is the concept great, but when they had the themed Monopoly, Seinfeld Monopoly I had, NFL Monopoly
I only played the regular, but I couldn't get into the baseball only or this only. I couldn't do that. That's too
it was
much.
Great. In the football one, you could be a referee instead of the car.
Oh,
you could
really?
You could be a referee. You could have a little football helmet, a kicking tee, the Lombardi trophy.
There's got to be 500 Monopolies now.
Yeah.
And they're not cheap, man. I looked at a couple. couple of Patriots ones for gifts. There's like $59.95.
You know, before there was all this PlayStation this and PS that and all this stuff here, Rich and I would have to play a football game on a board that would shake violently.
That might be the stupidest game in the history of the world. And all the guys would do is go zzz,
and the guys would just go around in a circle.
What was it called? You'd press a button.
It never had a catchy name.
Electric surges would go through, and the guys would just
football.
Bounce. Little plastic figures would just bounce up and down and fall
down.
And
you couldn't throw it. Even if I took my guy with the ball and I'm going to line him up straight in the middle of the field, he would never go straight.
No.
And you're supposed to be able to turn the right. It would just go zzz, and everybody had one, but you could never score.
You couldn't do anything.
They couldn't even play with it.
Bounce up and down until they fell sideways.
You played for like an hour, and 59 minutes of it was just setting up the play. Yeah,
and it was expensive.
And then turning
out,
Speaking of mindless games that were fun,
and we're dating ourselves a little with this one, but did you ever hear a Mousetrap?
Oh, yes, I liked that game.
But the problem with it is it took 20 minutes to set up for 30 seconds of excitement, and then if you breathed on that thing, it was like Jenga.
Yeah.
I mean, you breathe near it, and everything just crashes down.
I liked Mousetrap. Kerplunk?
Yeah.
I remember Kerplunk. I used to have that. Yeah.
That was a fun game.
That was like a block game, was it not? Like little blocks?
It was like marbles that were trying to go through.
That's right.
So that was good.
Yeah. And by the way, if you have one on the Town Fair Tire text line, let us know, 802-655-6672.
Not a game that was as easily accessible. Like I don't know that you could really buy it, but you always play it like in an arcade. The bubble hockey.
It was
kind of like it was hockey with like foosball controls, basically.
Absolute childhood obsession. Yeah. I can't even imagine how many hours we played that.
Yeah.
I always had like three or four Nerf balls in my house. Always totally. Yeah. Two footballs, a mini Nerf basketball, then the soccer. I always had Nerf something kicking and breaking around. What does it say? I can't see that.
Pat in Westport says, you're thinking of Don't Break the Ice.
Yes. Don't Break the Ice was awesome.
That's the one you thought was Kerplunk.
Yes. I see other people saying Break the Ice. But there was also a block game that you like build. It wasn't just block, but there was like different shapes and you build them on top of each other.
Well, like that's Jenga sort of.
No, that it was before Jenga. Come on now. I thought it was Kerplunk, but I guess I'm wrong on that. I'm getting my games mixed up there. I got them all mixed up.
Somebody would always hit the table and everything would go
falling. No, but Break the Ice, I remember. That was a good game. That was a good game out there. All right, before we get to the show, I saw this on Boston.com and I thought this was fascinating. I just saw it like about 20 minutes ago. They were doing hashtag GOAT. Greatest of all time, Boston.
Okay.
And the top five voting, well, actually, votes 2, 3, 4, and 5 out of 80,000 were separated by 500 votes. Is that just fascinating?
So this is athletes?
Yeah, just greatest of all time.
So in other words,
Boston.
This is the reiteration of the Boston Mount Rushmore that we've all done 200 times.
Right, but it's so much closer. Except there's five faces and so much closer than you would ever imagine. They had Brady at 22,000 votes. Bill Russell at 20,900, Bobby Orr 20,600, Larry Bird 20,400, and Ted Williams 20,300.
Wow.
That's 600 separating 2, 3, 4, 5.
You know what that is? That's whoever, whatever hands it ends up in. I mean, if you're an older guy, you go with the last four. If you're over 50, don't you feel like you probably go in the direction of a Bill Russell?
If you're like 100, you go with Tris Speaker.
By the way, I changed my vote on the game. Somebody, a first-time texter, just said Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
That was a great one.
They're the best ever.
Yeah.
That's the best ever.
And how about Ellen from Colchester says Chinese Checkers.
How about Hungry Hungry Hippo? How about that one?
I don't like Hungry Hungry Hippo, and I never played Chinese Checkers. It was really not my thing.
I would just
play checkers or chess.
Maybe.
Oh, I love backgammon. Yeah. I'm a professional backgammon player.
Okay.
I am. I'm totally
it's
a professional.
Pure luck most of the time.
No, it is not. That takes skill.
Yeah,
I think
a little
it does.
Bit.
Go
it
takes,
fish.
It takes nice rolls
go
of the
fish.
Dice.
Go
what
fish. What the hell are you talking about?
Go fish, war, gin rummy.
How about beer Uno?
That was
always a big one in my youth.
No, Uno was the game. It was never beer Uno for credit. Brady, what's
coming
up on the show today? What's going on?
Well, before that, let's tell you about where we're going to be soon, because tomorrow we're broadcasting live from Farnham Ale and Lager out in South Burlington. So we're really looking forward to being there out on Ethan Allen Drive. Great beer, great food, courtesy of our friends over at Mac Sugar Shack. It's all pet friendly, so come on and hang out. And then remember, 1 week from today is opening day of the 2018 baseball season, and we will be watching opening day for the Red Sox at RJ's, our favorite spot downtown. Opening day, thanks to our friends at Sam Adams. We'll be watching the Sox and Rays. We'll have all kinds of Sam Adams deals. They'll have the special seasonal and New England IPA on draft, and we'll be giving away a pair of Red Sox tickets on site.
So let me get this straight. We are going downtown to our favorite bar to drink beer and to watch the Red Sox, and we're getting paid for it. Is that correct?
Yes.
If we get there early, the Met game will be on.
I love this job.
Met game's at 1 o'clock.
And the Yankees are playing Toronto.
That's great.
Wow. Yeah.
So that'll be good. And apparently we've got some new listeners, our friends over at Clay's Barbershop on Williston Road. New friends of the show.
Listening to Clay's. Hey, how's it going out there?
They texted in and said that they're listening to the Huddle, so we appreciate
it. Arnie, probably not a frequent
follower to that. By the way, somebody said, what about Stratego?
Oh, absolutely.
I remember the game.
Guess Who?
Yeah. What's that?
Guess Who also.
I've heard of Clue.
Clue is a phenomenal. How did you forget Clue? Clue is a top three.
Clue because if you played with like two people, you couldn't guess without ruining the game, or you can't guess without ruining the game. Two, three people, you knew the answer.
Yep.
Clue
is still great.
Game
Stratego,
over.
Good call.
Stratego is it's another war game, another adult war game.
Look at Harry from St. George. Electric football, dry Tide soap for snow on the field, no rain games.
I never heard that. That's genius.
As for what's coming up on the show today, the Giants and their long-term outlook, we'll get into that. We'll react to Jeff Schulman's comments to us yesterday. Big deal, little deal, no deal at 435. Morgan Valley, a Rice graduate and now an assistant women's basketball coach at the University of Arizona.
Woo-hoo!
She'll join us at 5 o'clock. But first, the Giants have closed the book on the Jason Pierre-Paul era. They've traded one of their most influential defensive players in franchise history. They trade him to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So it's JPP and a fourth to Tampa for a fourth and a third. What do you think of the
move? It's really for a third because they're just going to swap the fourth spot there. So for all intents and purposes, let's just say for a third. Really what this is about is to get, $11 million? I see the one that says, what about Naked Twister? I invented Naked
but
Twister.
But no, Arnie.
That's the most disgusting
I invented
thing
Naked
ever.
Twister. I'll tell you about that later on. What they're really trying to do is get the, $11 million off the cap? Or what was
There's going to be $15 million of dead cap on this year's payroll. The Giants are only clearing $2.5 million this season.
Right.
It's for the duration. It's for the remaining 2 years of JPP's contract, then there will be no dead cap. So they're not clearing space this year, really,
but for the
following
two. There's no doubt that the rebuilding is going on. They gave him away. Again, a lot had to do with the money here. I think if they wanted to go in this direction, I really believe now more than ever they're going to go and take Josh Rosen at number two, or they'll just go ahead and trade that pick to whoever's going to give them the most draft picks and allow Buffalo and or Arizona to move up there. Otherwise, it's complete rebuilding. I bet you now that they wish that they didn't have Eli Manning. And whoever doesn't get a quarterback, let's say it's Arizona or Buffalo, I could see them making a call saying, if you're interested in Eli, let us know, because we're going to start Josh Rosen.
Well, as I was saying yesterday, I'm not convinced they're going after a quarterback, even though everyone else seems to be. I don't think Eli Manning's done. I think he's still got a couple of years, if he's healthy, still left in him. And I look at that and I go, maybe Bradley Chubb now at number two. This is great news, potentially, for the New York Jets, who now, with the three pick, could get the number two quarterback.
This move, to me, is terrible on this year alone. If you're only looking at this season, if you're being a narrow-minded Giant fan and you're saying, are we going to be as good as we can possibly be in 2018? Then the answer is no, because you didn't clear any cap space, essentially. You only got $2.5 million in cap space for this year. So you're still not, you're not turning JPP into a big free agent signing, which is what Giant fans who always want to be competitive want. You're taking away productivity on the defensive front. He still had 8.5 sacks last year, but you need to expand your vision. Okay, it's terrible for 1 year, but long-term, this is good. This is a team that now has freed up the money, as Arnie said, in 2019 and 2020. Now you have that salary relief major to try to re-sign Odell Beckham Jr. and or Landon Collins in your defensive backfield. You have to look at it this way. You have to take the long-term out. Like this year, the Giants got killed on this deal, but long-term, they're going to win out.
Well, how long have I been telling you? If I'm the Giants, and look, sure, I want them to win a Super Bowl, but they're no closer than the Cleveland Browns right now, and that's just the way it is. And I told you, every time you ask me, are you going to give this guy this money? Are you going to give that? I go, no. And who do you think is the next to be gone?
Odell Beckham.
You're damn right. And I've been saying that for how long? There's no way you're keeping Odell Beckham Jr. on this team. Matter of fact, you're going to wait right around to the draft. You're going to see what offers are coming in for that number two pick, what people are going to offer you for Odell Beckham Jr. Giants may load up on draft picks. By the way, the next 2 years not going to be great on quarterbacks in the NFL draft. They're going to load up, and the Giants are going to have to start the rebuilding process, but they're going to be doing it the right way with a whole bunch of draft picks. So I really believe Odell Beckham Jr. next to go. Where is he going to go? I think maybe the Rams are a destination. I don't know how much they have to give up or what you have to give up for an Odell Beckham
Jr. So you want to trade him now, you're
saying? Oh, hell yes.
Okay.
I'm not going to let him walk away.
That's what I'm saying.
You're getting a ton for him.
No, you're not.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, you're not going to get what you really think you are going to get for somebody like that.
Get a lot.
Not in the last year of a contract. Well, you'd have to guarantee.
Right, exactly.
All right, coming off an injury, but I still think, I don't know.
The injury doesn't even matter.
Someone's going to see that name and jump. I just think so. It's weird when you talk about getting rid of Beckham because they got Solder. They got the other guy from the other to protect the other side of the line. They fix up their offensive line partially, and now they're going to get rid of Beckham that Eli has some time to throw the ball.
You have to understand, they don't have a good enough team to go far. Right? They're not even going to be the playoffs, too.
But would you agree they're heading in the right direction? I like a lot
of
the moves
they've
made.
They may have to take another step backwards because Eli Manning's only going to be around a year or two. They're going to have to do it with another quarterback, and they're not going to do it with Eli Manning. They're going to whoever they take is the quarterback of the future and the one that's going to take him to a Super Bowl with how many years it is. So it's going to have to be Josh Rosen. No, I don't think they're going to be taking a step forward, even maybe record-wise, but otherwise, no, I don't think it's a step forward.
The one thing I don't like about this move is kind of what you alluded to, Rich. This team went out and spent big on Nate Solder. That is a move that, yes, it allows you to win in the future, but it's also a win-now move. And I've always felt like the Giants were in this position with Dave Gettleman where they were going to keep Eli Manning and try to extract every possible ounce of winning out of him while also having one eye on the future. So I kind of thought they were going to be in this kind of hybrid position where, you know what, we are going to do some moves to help this team win now and get back to what the Giant fans think is competitive Giants football, but they were also going to be having an ear towards the future. And getting rid of JPP for this year, it takes away your ability to win this year. So Giant fans who are looking for this team to rebound and go 10-6 next year, you get further away from that today. Long term, you won out in this deal. Long term, I have no doubt that the Giants are better off having gotten rid of JPP. But if you're trying to sell to your fan base that we're going to win this year and that's why we're keeping Eli Manning, then you're not selling
Rich,
me on that.
This question's for you because you're the Patriot fan. Would you rather have the Patriots do what they did with Garoppolo, trade him to San Francisco for, what was it, that second round, whatever it is?
Whatever the next choice is, I like.
If you could redo the trade and say, we'll trade Garoppolo, but we're going to trade him to the Giants, the dreaded Giants, and in return we get Odell Beckham Jr.,
For one year, coming off a huge injury, no.
Well, yeah, you could also re-sign. Forget about the injury; he's going to be fine. And two, you could re-sign him. It doesn't mean that he's gone after this year. Who would you rather take the second round pick?
That goes to show you,
you're not going to get.
The back was against the wall with Garoppolo, but there's nothing they could have gotten in return for him that I would have agreed with. I know they had their hand.
Well,
was
all about this. Was all about Odell Beckham Jr. Because I'm sure the Patriots would love to have him. But I'm sure Tom Brady would love to have him, but Belichick, he's not a Belichick type guy.
Since 2010, Jason Pierre-Paul is the only NFL player to have 400-plus tackles, 50-plus sacks, and 10 forced fumbles. So Jason Pierre-Paul has certainly been productive. Yeah. But Lewis Riddick of ESPN, he doesn't think that giving up JPP that big a loss for the Giants.
JPP is still a good player. He's not a great player relative to what his cost is. And look, Tampa Bay had a tremendous needs on defense at all three levels. Look, they can't get after the passers. The secondary is suspect. Their best players are at level two at the linebacker position with guys like Lavonte David. So you can see where they would initiate a talk like this. They need to get some bodies in there. They need to get some people who fit the profile of being a guy who can close out games. I don't know if JPP is still that guy.
Right, absolutely.
But you got to try and make moves in order to improve a defense that right now needs to keep pace with an offense in Tampa Bay that's going to be better.
So he likes the move from Tampa's perspective.
That's all I hear is about. As I was going to say, that's all I hear is how it's a good move from Tampa's perspective.
JPP's not done. Everybody thinks he's been around forever, and of course he missed the year with the fireworks incident. But, he had 8.5 sacks last year. I think he had 9 the year before coming off the injury. He's a big name, and you get that. But I think he'll fit in perfectly nicely.
The only thing I don't like about this is the exchange of the draft picks. Because the Giants are getting the third, and that's good. Getting a third-round pick is good. We know there's a lot of value in third-round picks, but they flipped fourth-round picks.
Right.
So the Giants are moving back in the fourth round 6 spots.
Right.
So they didn't get a better pick there.
No.
So I don't like that.
They didn't get a whole heck of a lot of anything, really, yeah, to be honest.
But I'm just saying, why not just keep the fourth round picks as they were and just trade them straight up, JPP for the third?
Because
I don't like moving back six spots.
And I'll tell you what, it's more numbers, you know, where they Jimmy Johnson, the old Dolphin, old Cowboy coach, came up with that system about, you know, well, if you're going to give me that, it's got to be this. And it goes by numbers. I think that's antiquated, though, the way he used to do it. I'm surprised, but six spots doesn't seem like a whole heck of a lot when you're getting a guy like JPP.
But you got to think, too. I mean, if you can get him, you can buy low right now with him, because when Betcher came in, the handwriting was on the wall with a 3-4 defense that JPP wasn't going to fit in as well. And I think Tampa was the smartest one, that was able to jump on that.
You want to get in the Tom Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. We're off and running. Brady, what's coming up next?
We'll react to what Jeff Shulman, Vermont Athletic Director, told us yesterday about John Becker, about men's hockey, and about the facilities on campus.
Coming up next, right here on In the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. I'm feeling in a good mood. Brady, take today and tomorrow off, would you please? Just go ahead. No Champlain Valley game night for Brady. We want him to have a good time out there, Rich. It's beautiful out there. He's been working so hard.
And we keep telling him how beautiful it is. Yes. And his response is, well, I wouldn't know. I'm in here all day.
You're done at 6 o'clock
today.
6 o'clock. There you go. How about that?
Someone's still got to do an hour's worth of post-production.
Ugh.
You want to do that?
Intern Aaron! Where's intern Aaron? Get him in here. He's going to have to do post-production. All right, Brady, we had a chance to catch up with Jeff Shulman yesterday. Very interesting stuff that he had to say on the show.
Yeah, UVM Athletic Director Jeff Shulman joined us. We talked about a number of different things, and we really didn't get a chance to react to all of them. So let's start with this. John Becker is going to be a possible target for a lot of basketball programs after this season comes to an end. We've already seen some of the coaching carousel in motion. You know, Dan Hurley left Rhode Island. He went to UConn. Well, what do we think about John Becker's future? Jeff Shulman answered that.
You know, John is a very marketable coach, and we understand that. And but we've also worked really hard to make it this position one that he really feels good about. He's done an incredible job. You know, our program is as healthy as it could possibly be, and we'd love to see him continue as the leader of our program. But you know, I'm not naive about what else is out there and the fact that John is on many, many schools' lists.
Now I know what you think. You think Jeff Shulman sounds resigned to him leaving.
He sounds pessimistic to me.
I have changed my tune on this, and I don't know that I think that it's forever, but for this year, I think John Becker's staying. For a while, I would have thought, got to strike while the iron's hot. You're going to graduate all these seniors. You don't know if the team's going to be as good. How can you really duplicate what the team's done the last 2 years? I'm changing that tune. I think that John Becker is back this year. And the reason why is this. A lot of the jobs that are going to be open are going to be as a result of these NCAA or the FBI sanctions or FBI investigations. So you're going to be possibly inheriting programs that are on probation. You're going to be inheriting programs that you don't exactly know what's coming next. I think that's going to cause some of the market for upward mobility to stall. I don't know that John Becker wants to go and inherit a program that's in trouble, nor do I know that other coaches want to leave places to go inherit those programs to which John Becker could go fill those jobs. And the second reason is this. Why do you push for the new arena so hard if you never plan on seeing it built or you never plan on being a part of it? He came on the air when you were on vacation, and Arnie remembers this. He told us, he said, this fan base has been spoiled. This fan base needs to appreciate what we've done with essentially limited resources. Why call out the fan base, and why stir that pot if you plan on just bolting town? If you knew you were leaving, just say, we've got the best fans in the world, and I love playing for them every night. I just starting to feel like the messaging is there that he's going to stay.
I don't think he's going to stay. I don't think he's going to stay at all. Matter of fact, if I'm him, I'm pretty upset at myself. He has no one to blame but himself. Odom, the coach of UMBC, is leaked to the East Carolina job, which I think is a good job. Jeff Lebo used to be the head coach down there, and I believe they let him go. Remember him, the former North Carolina star? Rhode Island now is looking for a coach. Yeah. Again, Odom is linked to that job from UMBC. And if I'm John Becker, I'm like, wait a minute here. You're talking about a 40-year-old coach. Yes, he had a great 16 seed beat the one seed. Now he's jumped over John Becker as the hot coach to hire. So if I'm Becker, I'm looking in the mirror going, damn, you know, why is my name not linked to the East Carolina job? Why, when I looked up the article on the six people that could now replace Rhode Island, is Odom on that list, but John Becker is not on that list? You have to strike while the iron's hot, and the iron was really hot last year. It's not what you've done for me. It's what you've done for me lately. And he wasn't in the NCAA tournament. John Becker should look in the mirror, and the only person he should be upset at is himself if he doesn't have a plum job. If a plum job comes around, and he's not going to be offered any of the jobs that are going to be on the FBI probe. He's just not.
No, but it's going to be, are other people going to want to leave mid-major programs to take those jobs when there's trouble?
Possible, which would lead more mid-major openings. If he's offered the Rhode Island job, I would take it. If he's offered any of the jobs, like a Rhode Island job, I would take it if you want to take the next step, because there's no guarantee you're going to be the hot coach like he was last year, and you saw what he missed out this year. Odom is now past him as the hot coach, and I'd be upset if I was John Becker.
So after all that, do you think he'll be back?
No.
So you're saying no.
I say no. I think
because you made it sound like he has unfinished business.
No, there's no unfinished business. He's not going to be here for the 5 or 6 years or whatever it is it's going to take to build that a new arena.
Two.
So you could
one plus two. So yeah, it'll be three.
He's not going to make it that long. He's doing this because that's his job right now. He's the head coach at University of Vermont. But let's face it, he's going to take the next step up, and if that's going to be Rhode Island, I'm going to take it. I mean, Danny Hurley's been there 6 years in Rhode Island, and now he's got the UConn job. You don't think Becker's kicking himself saying that I wanted the UConn job? You don't think that crossed his mind that I wanted the Memphis job? Look at Penny Hardaway got the Memphis job.
What about the possibility that it's not all about money and he's doing just fine here? Granted, he's not making anywhere near what he would make in almost any other place in a Division I program, but maybe he actually likes Burlington and he likes the fact that the place is full and he likes the fact that the team loses about one out of every 8 or 9 games they play. And I mean, the talent on this team isn't going away.
I think the thing we have to know and the thing that we don't know is what is the most important to John Becker.
Right.
Is it money?
Exactly.
Is it legacy? Is it opportunity to win a national championship?
Family stability.
Yeah. Will Brown had multiple overtures to leave Albany. He's been at Albany for nearly 20 years. He's been to the NCAA tournament 5 times. He is UAlbany basketball. He had multiple options to leave. I remember, you know, this job isn't all that great, but I remember Fordham was coming after him before St. John's hired Chris Mullen. They were thinking about Will Brown because he's from the downstate area. Now, when you think UAlbany basketball, you think Will Brown. Maybe that's important to him. Now Becker's never going to get on the Tom Brennan level, so he's never going to be the face of Vermont basketball. But if he ushered them into a new arena and wanted to be the, you know, face of phase two of Vermont basketball, he could have that. We have to figure out what his motivations are.
I think it's really important that Jeff Shulman comes on and said, basically, and we'll have this cut, I'm sure, in a second as part of the conversation, but he sounded very confident and used the term shovels in the ground, which got me pretty excited because for me, it's, well, here, listen to it.
Our ultimate goal is to have final approval of this project from our trustees by the fall, bid the job, and put a shovel in the ground by March of next year, so just about a year from now. It's probably about a 2-year construction project, so we're hoping to be up and running in the 2020-2021 academic year.
I mean, that's really soon. I mean, that's
3 to 4 years.
I mean, hear
that's three. That's three. Two more seasons, and then in.
Yeah, it's 1 year, and then the shovel's in the ground, and then, I mean, that's a big step to me. What he said yesterday. Maybe we're overthinking his words, but for him to say shovels in the ground in 1 year, what happened to the fact that they need $60 million and so far they've got $4 million or whatever? I mean, all of a sudden the money conversation doesn't seem to be part of it. It's transitioned to, all right, here we go, shovels in the ground in a year.
I'm under the impression this is happening. You're right. The money part of the conversation, maybe it's gone away, but it shouldn't have gone away. But I'm under the impression this is happening. I'm under the impression that both Kevin Sneddon and Jim Plumer on the hockey side and both Chris Day and John Becker on the men's basketball or on the basketball side can start to use this as a recruiting tool. I'm encouraged by this. I'm excited by this. I think it's great for recruits coming into the program. And here's what I think about the facilities. For men's basketball, I think this helps spread the gap. I mean, you've looked at where the gyms in the America East are. Albany's not that great. Maine is average.
Nice facility.
Not what UVM and UMBC are talking about. UMBC's got a brand new arena.
Yes.
UMass Lowell plays in nothing.
Songus Arena, yeah.
So they, yeah. So I think
those are bigger, a lot bigger.
I think in basketball, this is a separating factor, a brand new facility. In hockey, I think this just gets you up to par with what the rest of Hockey East is and gets you back in the conversation.
Well, with hockey, they've got to figure out a way to out-recruit the Boston teams, and it's been this way forever, and it just doesn't happen. And how do you do it? An arena sure wouldn't hurt, or at least a newer-looking arena.
You know, you guys always bring up facilities. You know, in hockey, I don't know, like BU, BC, they don't have a lot of people going to their games. I mean, what, the arenas are off campus and stuff like that.
I mean, the Gannis Arena's right there on Comm Ave. Well, it's right there at the campus,
and
it's gorgeous.
I'm just saying, do a lot of people really, do a lot of the recruits that come in here say, oh, well, Vermont doesn't have the up-to-date facility, so I'm not going to go here. We get the best kids as it is in the American East anyway, don't we?
Oh, yeah. So I think basketball is a different story, but I think hockey right now, I think they're going to have to consider that. Absolutely. If you go to Gannis Arena or Conti Forum down at BC, and then you go to Gutterson, Gutterson's got an incredible amount of history, amount of charm. I love the place to death. But if you're an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, you know, high school, junior, senior making a decision, and you compare those two arenas, you've got no chance.
There's probably about 10 other things you're thinking about before then. One is, who's going to get me to the NHL? Where am I going to play more? Who do I have a better rapport with the coach? Then I maybe get to the fans. Maybe I'll get to the school. What about my major? Having the arena is going to be like number 7 or 8 on my list.
Right, but if you want to get to the NHL, and BU's got a bunch of freshmen who all have 40 points on the season, there's better talent there right now, and that's going to up your scoring totals.
In the conference, UMass Lowell, Boston College, New Hampshire, Maine, Boston University all rank ahead of Vermont in attendance.
And Vermont.
And you're talking basketball?
I'm talking about hockey.
Oh, hockey.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's, I mean, I think it's 4,005 or whatever Gutterson holds, and they filled it most of the time, even through a bad season, or at least they sold out the tickets.
93% capacity was the average at Gutterson.
Yeah. And a bad season. That's pretty good.
Well, and how many is that? How many people in the conference? There's only, so they're at the bottom of the conference then, right?
No, they finished ninth in the league standings.
I meant in the tenure.
I understand that. So are there nine teams in Hockey East off the top of my head?
UMass.
And I'm not going.
I mean, Merrimack has a tiny, they renovated it. Merrimack's got a tiny arena. They
UMass,
don't fill it.
UMass is behind them. Merrimack is way behind them.
UNH has the Whittemore Center, which is nice, and it's big.
That's above. They're ranked ahead of you.
I think they could win now, even if they didn't have a brand new, you know, this, that, or the other. I think they should be able to get enough talent in here to go ahead and make the difference. I think in football that makes more of a thing where they have these great, massive, like in Alabama, weight training and this and that and the other and like theaters and bowling alleys and crap like
locker
that.
Rooms make a big big difference. They don't have one.
But, I mean, you're the perfect person to ask this, Arne. I never thought I'd say that in my lifetime. But you've got a kid who's been on the recruiting trail. I mean, if he walks into Gutterson, sees the whole facility, everything, all of it, and then he walks into a Gannis Arena, does that sway him towards BU?
I think the average kid, like I said, can I play? Can you get me to the NHL? Do I have a good rapport with the coach? Attendance, you know, stuff like that.
I think you're wrong, Arne, and I think you're wrong to ask Arne that question because Arne might not be swayed by it, but the kid is swayed by that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. These are 17-year-olds we're talking about.
There's a reason why. Remember Oregon said there's a very specific reason why we have 192 jerseys in football because 17-year-old kids like to see 192 jerseys.
And you're right about that.
And the gear that accompanies them. The kids, the aesthetics do matter to the kids. You as the dad are thinking about academics first, and you as the dad are thinking about course
NHL.
Load.
Well, they're also thinking NHL. Who can take me
a to? Lot of these kids are not thinking NHL. BC, BU, when some of the kids at UVM are, a lot of these kids
I think
are
they're
not
all
thinking
whether they're good enough or not, are all thinking the NHL. You know what I mean? Whether they know they have a chance or not, they're thinking that. Brady, what do we got coming up next? We're moving along here.
Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Coming up next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow. Welcome back to the huddle. It's time for our newest feature.
Maybe this one will sweep the nation also.
It's time for Big Deal.
Rich, you guys are missing the point. This is a huge deal.
Little deal.
Oh, please, Arne. This is nothing.
Or no deal.
You guys are both wrong. It's in the middle. How am I even still listening to you?
On 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. A busy Thursday. Brady Toby will be tomorrow real quick.
We'll be out at Farnham Ale and Lager in South Burlington. Can't wait to get there. It's our 101.3 ESPN Winter Craft Beer Tour. Max Sugar Shack will be there, too.
Yeah.
So come on and hang out 4 till 6.
That guy lives right around the corner from me. I see the Sugar Shack all the time.
Oh, I can't wait.
I want to break in, but I don't think he has anything
between
in there.
Beer and Sugar Shack, then I'm good.
All right, Brady, let's get the big deal, little deal, or no deal. He's so quick on that. He doesn't want me to bust him.
He didn't give you a chance for
a take,
too.
No, he doesn't do anything.
All right, question one. The Giants traded Jason Pierre-Paul to the Buccaneers. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
It's a big deal, not because they lost JPP, or not that he was going to be the big influencer and take him all the way to the Super Bowl this year. I think it's a big deal, not even so much of the money they're going to save this year or next year or the year after. I know this year it's not that much. This is a big deal in mindset. Are the Giants saying we wave the flag on this year and next year and we're rebuilding and that Eli Manning's just a dead man walking and that we'll just give him one more year so we could, when we draft a quarterback, he could learn from Eli? I think it's a big deal because of the mindset. This tells me they've waved the white flag on the Eli Manning career and they're going to go and start from scratch.
I still think it's a big deal because JPP was kind of an odd fit under James Betcher's scheme. He's going to come in with a 3-4, as everybody knows, and he wasn't going to work with that. They shed payroll eventually, so it's going to be a big deal even more so, I think, next year. I also, as I said earlier, think that this makes it possible that Bradley Chubb might go number two to the Giants. Jets have got to love that. They can now get the number two overall quarterback with the third pick.
Yeah, it's a big deal because the Giants now, I'm just wondering what exactly message are they sending to the fan base? They said that they want to win this year. They want to restore Giant pride. And you know that with the Eagles having, look, I know they're the Super Bowl champs, but they're going to play a first-place schedule. It's very, very difficult. A lot of teams that get to the Super Bowl don't even get back to the playoffs because of how difficult the schedule becomes. We don't know what's really up in Dallas right now. So the Giants have told us that they want to win this year. This move doesn't mean that makes it harder for you to win, but long term, I think it's a huge deal because of the ability to go out and re-sign OBJ or Landon Collins or both, potentially, and because of the impact on the draft. So big deal across the board. Question two in the huddle. Johnny Manziel threw at the pro day for San Diego State. Big deal, little deal, or no deal?
Well, he only had, two bad passes from what I understand, and the rest was pretty good out there. I think it's a little deal. This guy's good enough to be a backup quarterback in the NFL. But like him and many others that have gone ahead and, burned bridges and have done things to just pretty much couldn't get out of their own way now, that's why they're not playing in the NFL. And besides, you don't want a person on your team like him or Tim Tebow or somebody like that that's going to bring more attention to the backup spot than the starter. I think it's a little deal. I think he could play, but he better start looking at whatever one of those other leagues are because he could play there.
I couldn't come up with no deal or big deal, so I'm going to settle
right where you are.
I'm going to go with little deal. This potentially could be a big deal. Look, he might potentially – there's just so many ifs associated with Johnny Manziel. This may be – we may look back 5 years from now when he's playing in the NFL and doing relatively well and say he did his thing for that the San Diego State Pro Day. That was the thing that got the ball rolling a little bit, and he continued to make proper decisions. He played well enough in his pro day, opened a few eyes, and he moved forward. I'll go little deal.
I think it's a big deal just because we don't see this. This is a guy who's been in the NFL, who's throwing at a college pro day, and really, now I know he's doing this in part for him, but the showcase of the pro day was on the two receivers that he was throwing to. He was training the wide receivers, and they said, will you be our quarterback at pro day so that we can look good for scouts? And A, he was willing to do it. I know, of course, he knows there's a possible benefit for him also, but I think it's a big deal because it's something that we don't ever see. An NFL quarterback going to a college pro day that isn't their own, I think it's a big deal. Question number three. The NFL is not likely to change pass interference to a 15-yard penalty. Big deal, little deal, or no deal?
I don't think they will, and I wouldn't. I need to have more studies done on this. I'm not a NFL rules expert, but I don't want somebody like Belichick, coming up with some glitch that I haven't thought of that's going to go ahead and destroy the whole reason of the rule.
I love it.
I need to have it talked more and find out exactly what receivers think, cornerbacks think, and and actually quarterbacks also. I want to know what people think about it before we make a drastic move like that. That's a pretty big move. I don't think I'm ready for that.
I think it's a big deal because I'm ready for it. I'm completely ready for it to be a 15-yard penalty. You've got to, at some point, stop the ability of a quarterback to just throw up random passes into the end zone and still know as the ball's coming down, you've got a 50-50 chance you're going to have first and goal on the one. I think putting this off is a big deal.
I think it's a big deal, too, but I was interested to read further into the proposal that the Jets propose that there's actually two levels of pass interference. They want a 15-yard penalty, and then they do want the more egregious spot foul. And look, I think in a perfect world, that's the way it would be. But the NFL has tried to get rid of subjectivity on things. They've tried to make clear-cut rules. Remember the old face mask rule? It used to be 15 yards if you tugged at the face mask and 5 yards if you grabbed it and let go. And they got rid of that because they didn't want to have gray area. I think the Jets rule works perfectly if it could be applied perfectly, and the NFL has tried to get rid of that because it just can't be. So I'll say,
how does it apply? I mean, what would you say?
Well, if if it's just one grab of the jersey and he lets go, that's 15 yards. But if you maul the guy 40 yards down the field, then that's a spot foul.
What's the definition of maul? You could never do that.
So that's what the Jets had proposed. I think, look, logically, as fans, that sounds great, but you just couldn't apply it properly.
No, you couldn't. You could not at all.
So question four here. Congress and Major League Baseball are going to push the law through that would limit the earning potential of minor league players, and minor league players currently don't even make minimum wage. Big deal, little deal, or no deal?
I mean, it's a big deal. I don't understand. I mean, the only other occupation I know that gets paid under minimum wage are what, waiters and waitresses?
Bartenders.
Whoever gets tipped.
And I guess salespeople who work on commissions, they don't work on an hourly wage.
I think we're under a minimum wage right now,
aren't
we?
Yes, we are. Yeah. But I don't understand how minor league baseball players, I don't know how the situation got like this. I don't know why they're getting paid so little. I'm wondering how many of them are on private owners and why they're getting paid so little. It's a big deal, but I don't know what we could really do for them. Because they're not, Brady, they're not part of the MLB.
They're not part of the players
union, right? So I don't know if there's anything we could do for them.
No, I heard you talking about this on Champlain Valley Game Night. Fascinating the other night. As somebody who's been in the middle of it last summer, and these guys, I mean, they really, the big thing here is that you have to remember that they're really only playing baseball for 6 or 7 months out of the year. So what do? Go work at a supermarket or something? Not that that's a bad job. I'm just saying, how do they fill in the rest of the year? I mean, it's not all baseball for them.
Yeah, currently, here's what happens. Minor league players only get paid for the season in which they're playing. So you're looking at, if you're talking about short season, you're looking at $5,000 for the year. If you're talking about a full season, you're looking at $9,000 a year.
Yeah, I will tell you that as far as the minor league players, and I can only speak for low A, you know, New York Penn League, they get more food than you can ever possibly eat. I have no idea how those guys stay so thin, but they get three big meals a day. They get the lodging, not great lodging. They're staying in somebody's cellar.
But they often pay for their own accommodations.
I think the team pays for the hotel.
Yeah, the hotel on the road. But at home, guys are often paying dues that go to that.
Okay, yeah, I heard you talking about that. I wasn't sure. Look, the conditions aren't great.
Some of the Lake Monsters bill it, which means they stay with other families.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works with all the teams at that level, for sure. But the thing is,
not
it's such
true.
A discrepancy. I mean, these guys are going from making minimum wage, then they get eventually, I mean, you look at the major leaguers, you play one at bat, one inning of a game, and you automatically make, what, $300,000-$400,000?
Yeah, but I don't think that justifies it because a lot of these guys will never get to the majors. A lot of these guys won't ever get there. This is a big deal because the team, it would cost, to give everybody in minor league baseball a $30,000 a year raise, just say give them $30,000 a year, that would put everyone between $30,000 and $40,000. It would only cost a major league team $7.5 million. That's the average salary of a fourth outfielder. Okay? So it costs them nothing to pay their minor leaguers even $30,000 to $40,000. These guys only get paid during the season, they don't get paid during spring training, and they're expected to come in and get better and better. It's nearly impossible to do both. They need to make more.
And as you mentioned, they aren't just showing up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, hitting the ball around, and having some laughs. It's pretty much round the clock. If you include where they're staying, you include the overnight bus trips, the whole deal.
Early work, training work, rehab. They're in there for more than 8 hours a day, and they're not being.
You could save money to go ahead and pay for that if you're an owner. Like when they bring up the 40-man rosters, you could just pull up 39, 38, save two salaries that you don't want to go and pay full-time rosters and have that go to the remember when the baseball tried to stop doing 25-man rosters and every owner agreed that they'll just have 24? Boy, there was a big problem there, was there not? You could save tons of money like that.
Question number five, and we don't have as long as I would have wanted on this one, but so we got a new guy at Hot 96.7.
Oh, is that the guy down the hall?
Yeah, Ryan. Okay. He's a great guy.
I haven't met him yet.
He's our new DJ at Hot 96.7. He took a gym selfie today and posted it on Facebook. Is this a big deal? Is gym selfieing a big deal, little deal, or no deal?
Shirt on or shirt off?
Shirt was on.
Shirt was on, but it was like a muscle shirt. Was he showing off?
Oh, see, there's the new guy.
Like his bronze, you know,
that's a fireable offense.
Yeah, bring the new guy. Ryan, get on the microphone.
That's a fireable offense, taking a selfie in a gym.
Listen here, boys. Hi, everyone.
Hey, it's the new guy.
What's your name again?
Ryan.
No, you're not kidding. You don't know his name. You're not kidding.
You're one to talk.
Well, Brady said his name before he came in. That's how I knew it. So I thought it was Robert. But
Ryan took a selfie at the gym and posted. That's definitely a big deal.
One thing here. It technically was not a selfie. A selfie is when you take the. Well, you don't have to take the frontward camera on your phone, but most people have it nowadays.
You took it in front of the mirror.
Is if you're taking it and you're like holding it in front of your face and you're taking a selfie that way. Technically, I did not take
so you took a picture in front of the mirror like you're a 17-year-old.
Oh, jeez. Did you get the guns in there? Oh, my goodness. Do you have a dip in your mouth?
No, I do
not. Okay, I was about to say, oh, my goodness.
He's not Julian Edelman. it's a big deal. I will say this. Selfie at the gym guy is number three on my most hated people at the gym.
All right, well, at least I'm not number one.
What's
number
two?
Number one is the guy who wears the hat. Like, who is wearing the hat at the gym?
The guy yesterday that played basketball.
The guy played basketball.
And you said something
that's
to him about
weird.
That.
Why would you wear a hat when you play basketball?
Oh. Yeah, this guy was wearing sweatpants and a hat. I wanted to throw him off the court, and he was on my team. I'd rather play 4 and 5 than play with that guy.
I wear a hat 100% of the time I'm in the gym.
I knew it.
If you are wearing a hat at the gym, don't be in the gym. That's how I think about it.
You just eliminated half the people.
I wear a Baker Mayfield Nike thing and the tie at the back.
I mean, we're not talking basketball. We're talking about, like, on cardio stuff.
Yeah, don't wear a hat.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, don't wear a hat.
Yeah, and I don't wear a hat at the gym.
And also, unless you're a wrestler trying to cut weight, don't wear sweatpants. Don't
wear sweatpants. What's wrong with sweatpants?
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Shorts are for working out.
I understand,
exercise pants, and a lot of women wear yoga pants and things like that. Yeah. But for guys, don't be wearing baggy sweatpants that you're falling
over. I gotta argue with that one.
And by the way, if you're fat and hairy, don't wear muscle shirts. Please, I'm begging you.
I do.
I amend my statement to the joggers. The jogger pants that guys wear now, those are okay. But don't wear baggy sweatpants.
Those are basically sweatpants.
Don't wear baggy sweatpants that you're falling over.
Okay. So new guy who took a selfie at the gym. Do you play basketball also?
I do play basketball.
Wow.
He's pretty tall.
We're going to have to get him out there.
Yeah,
show him the
absolutely.
Ropes. No, don't say that. Don't say that.
Arnie will show you the ropes.
Just do it.
For about a minute.
You'll come in the cast. we don't want to have to do that to you. All right. There you go.
He's even got the Arnie. By the way, we get on the Town Fair Tire text line. We get some confirmation from the people at the Lake Monsters. The Lake Monsters pay to stay with the host family.
Oh,
so they are contributing dues. Wow. So.
Oh, they pay.
Yeah, they pay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The players pay dues.
Wow, look at that. All right, Ryan, appreciate that, my
nice
friend.
To meet you.
We'll get you on the basketball court.
I'm glad I got made fun of. It's good to see you guys.
You're the one making all the noise down the hall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's me.
And there you go.
Rich, you wearing a hat is far worse than his gym selfie.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know, though. It's pretty even there. That's a fireable offense. Brady, hour one in the books. Brady's going to come back with a Sports Center update. We'll get you ready for hour two next, right here on 101.3 ESPN. Tomorrow.
Everyone is listening to The Huddle. It's almost like we've got a quarter of a billion listeners per month. All right. This is The Huddle with Rich Hardy and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Hour two of the show. So much to get to. Of course, we'll have our spring training update. We've got the 4-minute football fix. Brady, where are we going to be tomorrow?
We're going to be broadcasting live from Farnham Ale and Lager in South Burlington on Ethan Allen Drive. So great beer, lots of fun on a Friday. We'll have power play again, so we'll have intern Aaron and Logan messing up back here, so that'll be fun. It's pet-friendly, so you can literally bring the whole family, so come on and hang out.
Can I bring my cat?
I think dogs are welcome.
I'm bringing my dogs, and I'm bringing Lord Stanley and Mr. Barksdale.
I'm afraid that Lord Stanley is going to bite our equipment.
I am afraid of Lord. Now, Lord Stanley just wants to come up and kiss you.
Or that's poop on the floor.
No, that's all he wants to do, but he's so big and clumsy and like a blockhead. I'm afraid he's going to run over somebody. So
we'll be out there, and also our friends from Mac Sugar Shack will be there. So food and drink Friday, what better combination is there? And remember, a week from today, it's opening day of baseball season, and we will be watching the Red Sox that day, 4 p.m. against the Rays. We'll be watching at RJ's downtown, our favorite spot downtown, thanks to our friends over at Sam Adams. We'll have the seasonal and New England IPA drafts. We'll have specials on Sam Adams products, and we'll be giving away a pair of Sox tickets on site.
I forgot, by the way, first pitch 4:05. How long is the pregame? Half hour?
Half hour.
Yeah. So 3:30.
20, I think it starts. Maybe.
All right. So
it's like 40 minutes total.
Okay. All right. So 3:30 with the pregame, and then boom, let's get ready for a little baseball.
Let's go watch baseball and drink beer and get paid for it.
Brady, you never even said this. Do you like this? Most of the teams are playing on Thursday. But back in the day, Rich, we used to have to wait for April for Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Riverfront Stadium.
Was it Cincinnati against somebody else, or was it just always Cincinnati?
Riverfront Stadium.
As the opening
game. Yeah, I like when everyone plays at the same time.
I do too.
I hate the Sunday, the Sunday night game, the game in Tokyo, the game in Australia that's 3 days early. I just want to see my team play when everyone else
does. It used to be Monday, and then they put one Sunday, and then I was getting confused.
And remember, what was it, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, the Red Sox opened against the A's? In Tokyo, and it's like the season started, and then it stopped for 5 days.
Yeah.
The Mariners are opening up against Oakland in Tokyo next year, and they did it 2 years ago also. Not quite 2 years ago, like 5 years ago.
All right. I'll read all the texts later on the Tom Fair Tire text line. Who's coming up next there, Brady?
Yeah, we're going to go out to the phone line now and find ourselves Morgan Valley. Morgan Valley, you know her. She played, Rich, you know her.
Yeah,
the
Valley Girls. Yeah, yes. Morgan and Ashley.
Played at Rice Memorial High School. Also won 3 national championships as a player at UConn. Maybe you've heard of them. She is now the assistant women's basketball coach at the University of Arizona. She's had stints at Towson, UMass, University of New Hampshire, among others. So Morgan Valley is with us now. Morgan, thank you for being with us. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Well, I have to ask you, how often do you get to come back to Burlington? Can we expect an Arizona-Vermont game at Patrick Gym anytime soon?
Well, I would love that. Not too often. I came back for the first time in about 6 years this past summer. I try to get back. My sister has 2 kids, so my life revolves around them. So when I come back and forth, they lived in Virginia and now they live in Cleveland, so I would go there instead, but always love to come home.
Now, one of our co-hosts, Arnie, is an Arizona graduate, so he says the phrase bear down like 272 times a day. How many times
bear
do you
down,
say
Arnie.
It out there?
Bear down. I just wrote a bunch of handwritten letters to recruits today. At the bottom, there was a bunch of bear down. So we say it a lot.
Well, I got him an Arizona snow hat for Christmas. So between that snow hat and his 92 Arizona t-shirts, there's plenty of Pac-12 love up here now.
I love it.
I read the laundry list of places that you have coached at. What landed you at Arizona?
3 years ago, I was at Virginia Tech, four years ago now, and a friend of mine coached at Washington, and they had an opening, and I had heard it was already filled, and she called me, and she said, hey, you know, we have this opening. My boss is going to call you. If he calls you, you know, you got to say yes. So I was like, all right, have him call me. I go out to Washington. Her and I have been friends now for about 10 years. After our first year, we go to the Final Four. She's an Arizona alum, all-time leading scorer and rebounder here, men or women. And they hire her as the head coach here. And Adia Barnes is her name. And so she tried to get me to leave last year. And I said, well, we're going to be better than we were when we went to the Final Four. I was like, I can't do that. I went for a couple head coaching jobs myself. And then I ended up staying at Washington at the end of the year. My boss took a job at Arkansas and invited me to go with him, but I can live a lot of places, and I just didn't see Arkansas in my stars. So literally the day after I had went for the Washington job, I didn't get it. The day after I found out I didn't get it, one of her assistants left and took a job somewhere else, and she called me, and she's like, all right, let's go. And so I flew down. That happened on a Friday. I flew down on Tuesday, and I started on Wednesday. So, yeah, that's how I came to the desert.
You talk about just the coaching carousel, and I think I don't know that everybody realizes just how crazy the world of coaching is. I mean, we're talking about, let's see, it looks like 6 different schools for you that you've had your hand in coaching. Just how difficult is it in coaching, and how much of a commitment to that lifestyle is it?
Well, it's really hard. You miss a lot. You know, it's not a 9-to-5. It's, you know, 12, 14-hour days. You're on the road, you know, in the Pac-12. We play Friday, Sunday. So we leave on Thursday. Sometimes I'd go recruiting. I'd be gone for a week and a half, you know, meet the team places. So it's really hard. You really have to love it. I got lucky. I realized really quickly that I wanted to be back at a level like Connecticut. So, you know, I started out at Holy Cross. Coach Givens gave me my first job, and then I got an offer to be the recruiting coordinator, which at the time, at another school at the University of New Hampshire, and at the time, that was like the coveted position. So I was like, well, I'm definitely doing it. So I went there, and I had a great time there, and then I had an opportunity to go to Towson. And then from Towson, I came back home because my parents retired. I came back to New England and took a job at UMass. And as soon as I did that, my parents moved to Virginia to help my sister raise her kids. So I stayed there for a while. Then I moved closer to them and took the Virginia Tech job. Actually, I took the job as an assistant to the head coach, and literally a week into the job, his top assistant left, got out of coaching, and he threw me into the role of assistant coach. So, you know, it's hard. I've moved across the country. I never thought I would live in Washington. I never thought I would live in Arizona. You know, I'm a homebody at heart. You know, I have four or five Vermont t-shirts I wear all the time. it's hard, but, you know, in the end, you have such really cool experiences.
Morgan Valley, assistant basketball coach, University of Arizona, played her high school ball right here locally at Rice and then went on to UConn, where she won three national titles. You played in Final Fours at UConn. You've coached in a Final Four at Washington. What's the difference in emotion like between playing and coaching at that level?
So when you play, you don't think like you're 18, 19, 20 years old. The only thing you think about is, wow, this is so cool. Like, you get all this gear, you know, from whatever company your school is sponsored by. You're doing all these events. You're signing autographs. You're playing in front of 25, 30,000 people. You're not really, you don't think about anything. You don't realize it. And then when you're a coach, you know, I just remember we beat Stanford in Kentucky, and my boss, Mike Neighbors, just looked at me. He's like, holy cow. And we both just started to tear up. It's like, it's very different. Because as a kid, and especially, you know, UConn wasn't UConn when I played. You know, they didn't win. We went to four Final Fours and won three, but that was kind of the start of all of this. So you look back at it now, and when you play there, it's like you're supposed to do it. And when you go to the real world, no one else does it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just a really cool feeling, and it's such a great stage, and it's amazing. It's pretty cool.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, you played with Diana Taurasi at UConn. You guys overlapped?
Yeah, we were roommates.
So then you've played with arguably the greatest player in women's college basketball history. There's a short list, but she's on it.
Mm-hmm.
You've coached the greatest scorer in NCAA history in the women's game, and Kelsey Plum at Washington. Mm-hmm. What qualities do just those great ones have?
Super competitive, super resilient, and, you know, they get a lot, but they take the brunt of everything. So as a head coach, a lot of head coaches will say, well, when we win, it's my player's success. When we lose, it's my fault. Those great players take on that same burden. So when we would lose at Connecticut, Diana always thought it was her fault. Sue Bird always thought it was her fault. When we lost at Washington, Plum always thought she could have scored 10, 15 more points. Like, it was always her fault. But when we won, they all give credit to everybody else. Hmm. So, you know, I think those are two of the biggest things that I had noticed.
When you go back to your high school days at Rice, and you played for, you know, Bernie Siplicki, who hosts our Saturday morning show, was your AD at Rice when you were there. When you were there, what was the decision to go to UConn about? Because you could have played anywhere and had a humongous role, and then said you went to the best and had, you know, an average less than you could have had it at other places. What was the decision to go to the best rather than go be a star?
Well, I mean, I was a top eight player in the country. It's not like, you know, I was the 60th player in the country, and I just went there because I thought I was going to play the whole time. You know, I had some injuries. I look back, I don't think I would have done anything different, because I think it's helped me in my coaching career. You know, and a lot of times people don't understand, like, the things that happen to you and the way you respond to them, they set you up for things later in life. So when I want a job, Coach RM was the first one to call. And if I, you know, things could have turned out different. I could have been bitter. I could have been upset. I wasn't. I was grateful. I worked hard. My dad always told me if I did everything I could and I played hard every day, I could look myself in the mirror and be proud, and I was. So, you know, I didn't go to UConn because they were the best, because at the time I wanted to go to Tennessee.
Yeah.
So Tennessee was the big dog back then. It wasn't Connecticut. Connecticut was good. They won a national championship my senior year in high school. But I literally walked into the locker room when I went for an unofficial visit. I started changing my shoes to go play pickup, and it just felt like for the first time I was around other females that wanted the same thing as me. So growing up, I played, you know, Andrew Provost and Jamie Merchant. We played pickup in my front yard, Jed Tebow, Ori Tebow. Every day in the spring, Alex Lloyd, they would come to my house, and that's who I played one-on-one with, two-on-two with. We'd sneak into Rice, and we'd play. We'd get guys to come, and we'd go play pickup. I was the only female. So I walked in there, and it was like, wow, these chicks are kind of bad. Like, you know, they're like, really, you know, they're in the gym early shooting. They're talking trash to me when I'm playing. Like, it just felt right. And I never second-guessed it. I never once wanted to leave. I never, you know, even through the struggle that I had, everything happens for a reason.
Morgan Valley, assistant basketball coach, University of Arizona, played locally here at Rice, also played her collegiate ball at UConn. We'll get you out of here. As we said, Hometown Heroes Week, we'll get you out of here on the two stock questions we ask everybody from this area that we ask, because everybody has a very different answer, and I love to get the perspective. It's a small group of people that come out of the state of Vermont and go on to the level that you are at. What does it mean for you to carry the banner of Vermont, you know, on this high level?
I'm a proud Vermonter. So, you know, I love my state. I love where I came from. I just think it's the best place to grow up. You really can't beat it. You know, it makes me proud. Like I said, I have a couple Vermont t-shirts, and I rock them everywhere I go. So I'm proud to be a Vermonter.
Morgan, last question then. You say you don't get back enough, but when you're back in town the next time, what's the food place you're going to first?
Oh, this is a tough one. There's a little creamy stand up in Grand Isle, and they have a raspberry maple creamy. And that was the first place my parents took me when I came home this year.
Well, I love that question, because the answers are always different. So, Morgan, we appreciate the time. We congratulate you on your success. And for you and Arnie, bear down, all right? We're rooting for Arizona.
Bear down. Thank you.
There you go. Bear down. Had I known she was the assistant coach last year, I would have called her up and tried to get my niece into there. She's looking around. I didn't know that. If I had a connection, I would have ever used that.
I think this was her first year. I think.
Okay, so now I don't feel so bad. Yeah. But there you go.
I can't tell you how dominant those two were, those two families and sisters. They were unbelievable.
How many ladies went to UConn from this area?
That's a tough one. I can't think of any others. But I remember everybody kind of thinking, like, oh, why are you going to UConn? You're not going to play.
Yeah, but she said UConn wasn't UConn when she was there.
They were awfully good.
She said that they had won one title her senior year of high school. But Tennessee was the school.
They were just so good, though. It was fun to watch those two.
I saw UConn just beat somebody by like 90.
Yeah. Was it Quinnipiac or something?
I don't know.
It was 140 to 70 or 50, something.
140 to 50
the
something.
The first round, yeah. They scored like 95 in the first half.
I was watching the guest that you had on that played for American University, play UCLA. They got down by 12 in the first quarter.
Oh, Emily Kinnison.
Yeah, and they ended up, I think, losing by 8 or so. I don't know the exact score, but they played UCLA even from there on out. Yeah. UCLA was a 3 seed, and they were like a 14 seed. Yeah. So
she was player of the year in that conference. I mean, it was fun. We watched it over in the bowling alleys, I think.
Yeah, no. We were watching the
it was over at McGillicuddy's.
Oh, sorry, we're in so many bars. I've lost track.
Yeah, but no, that was interesting also. But it looks like she's doing well, and you know, just taking over the college ranks. She wants to be a head coach someday. So
she's only like 34, 35 years old. So she's been 6 or 7 places now. in not a whole lot of time, so it's going to happen for her.
34, 35 years.
Morgan Valley's 34. How fast is life moving?
Wow.
Yikes.
Unbelievable.
And we got to hit the auction.
All right, yeah, tell everybody about the auction, Brady.
Yeah, Champlain Valley.
Because we're incapable of it.
Because we are incapable of it.
Champlain Valley auction is going till tomorrow at noon, so you still have a little bit of time to get those bids in there. And look, we've told you all week about the things that we know our audience is going to love. I mean, but how about this one? How about Stowe Soaring? How about a one-day trip with Stowe Soaring? You can soar 1 mile above scenic Mount Mansfield. You'll glide through the air on just silent wings, getting the very best view of the state, and all the bidding does is cost you $120.
Nice. Right?
Yeah, that takes off from the Morrisville Airport. It's absolutely stunning.
Is it a little plane?
Well, the plane, it starts, I mean, you've basically got this chain, a rope or whatever it is, and the plane takes you up, and it just drops, and you just float.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's pretty incredible.
So, my wife bought something. She bought two things. I don't know what, but it was on the credit card.
Are they for you?
I don't know what the hell they are.
Well, there's some unbelievable ones. I need
an
oil
stuff.
I mean, I got to get an oil change, and I see synthetic oil change with filter and rotation from Carcassonne for $39. That's like a $70 value. There's so much stuff on here. Dry cleaning, Arnie, that could help you.
Very much so with all the suits and ties I wear. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, there's 10 certificates, lots of adventure stuff, home and garden. It's that time of the year.
Well, 75% off or more on dining, shopping, entertainment, golf, overnight stays, automotive detailing, and tons more. Our friends at Yipes are over there as well. We've got the Stowe Country Club. You want to go skiing, there's those. They're there too. Sugar Bush Golf you can play. Lots of stuff to do. So get in there tomorrow at noon.
Read Kevin and Colt just a real quick. You wanted to comment on the interview.
He says, I live across the street from Morgan Valley's parents, and I can say I'm a witness to her dominance over the boys and all the hours she put in for practice in the driveway.
How funny.
And we get another one that says, Morgan Valley had a sister that also played at UConn.
Oh, Ashley. It was ridiculous.
So she also played at UConn.
And she was just as good.
They're not. Wait. They're twins, right?
No. I think they were a year apart.
You told me about the twins that played. I thought there were twins that played.
Yeah, they weren't twins.
No. Okay, so.
But they were on the same team for like 2 years, and they just killed everybody.
And how about Bernie Siplicki being the AD at Rice when she was there?
Bernie.
Yep.
That's too funny. All right, what is coming up next, Brady? What are we getting to?
Well, we got to get back into the Giants. They trade Jason Pierre-Paul. What does that mean for the future of Big Blue?
Yeah, my Dolphins get better, too. On the
they did not get better.
Right. 7-9,
why,
baby.
Because they got a running back?
That was like 109 years old.
He's like 108. All right, that's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Tomorrow. I miss football. You miss football. We all miss football. So let's talk some football. Training camp may be a ways away, but we'll help you through the wait. This is your 4-minute football fix on the Huddle. 101.3 ESPN. Let's go.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. By the way, Town Fair Tire text on if you want to get in, 802-655-6672. We're getting a bunch. We should keep up on that. So 802-655-6672. Time for the 4-minute football. Wow,
I'm not
so on it.
See,
wow.
This is what it is now. You're so quick on the trigger. He's not going to even give you a chance.
Yes.
I'm just going to start playing it
right
out of the break. So the Giants trade Jason Pierre-Paul. They also exchange, they get a third-round pick, and then they exchange fourth-round picks with the Buccaneers. This move has big ramifications for the Giants' future. What do you think of it, Arnie, long-term?
I'll tell you exactly what I said earlier. They are giving up on the chance to win a Super Bowl immediately. They're they're trading players, saving money. I'm dying to see what they're going to do with the second pick. Are they going to take Rosen, or are they going to trade it and try to go ahead and stock up picks that Buffalo will give them and keep Eli for more than a year? I don't think they will. I think they'll use that pick for Josh Rosen. I think they're waving the flag. They said enough is enough. We're not going to win with the crew that we've got. Eli Manning's making way too much money. I think this is going to be his last year with the Giants. I can see him being shipped off in the middle of the season, like Arizona, maybe shipped off after the draft if Arizona or Buffalo doesn't get a quarterback. I think the days of Eli Manning are over.
Well, I said earlier in the show I thought he had a couple of good years left in him, and I immediately get hit with a couple of texts saying he's been done for 3 years.
Yes,
and I looked at the numbers, and I just said, last year, sure. He's getting killed because he had no offensive line. But the 2 years before that, he was okay. He was certainly good 3 years ago. So we'll see.
You don't get better as you get older.
I just feel like he's got a couple of years left. It's going to, like you said, this sets up a fascinating number two pick.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we need to expand. The question is, how does this impact the future, not how does it impact the present? I think now we can agree the present does not look as good today as it did 4 hours ago before this trade got done, or 6 hours ago. But long term, I think this is great for the Giants. They are going to get an extra third-round pick, and we know there's value in third-round picks. You talk about the Giants needing a running back in addition to Jonathan Stewart. Well, that's where Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara came in. That's where running backs were taken. So they get good value at a third-round pick, which is a productive player in the NFL, and they clear cap space in 2019 and 2020, and they're going to need it in 2019 because they certainly, I imagine, would like to re-sign Odell Beckham Jr. I know they should want to re-sign Landon Collins. And I tell you this, if I could only have one Giant player long-term, it would be Landon Collins over Odell Beckham Jr. He is that good. He's an all-pro safety. And when you talk about good defenses in this league, they are anchored by all-pro safeties. Ed Reed for years, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Eric Berry, Troy Polamalu, good safeties are impact players, and Landon Collins is one of the best.
I'm a Giant fan. I don't want to hear 2021. I don't want to hear 20 and 20. I don't want to hear anything like that. If we're talking long term, I just want to know what you're going to do with that number two pick. And because you've given up, either you better take Josh Rosen with that number two pick. I don't see another choice. If you trade that pick, you better get a boatload of people, because I don't see any other choice other than take Josh Rosen right now. And Sam Darnold's going number one. That's a guarantee. Like I've been telling you for like a year and a half now.
It almost feels like being a Celtics fan. Just hang in, trust the process. It'll happen eventually. We're going to start saving money and getting draft picks, and it's all going to work out. I don't know if you. I mean, really, coming off of a 3-win season, were you really expecting them to contend next year, no matter what they did in the offseason? I mean, the fact that they're going to save only $2.5 million this year says to me that they're not worried about this coming year, but they'll have a load of freedom after that, as Brady said.
But it's the draft pick. It's the money after that. I would just want to see what they're going to go ahead and do with that draft pick. If they're serious, they'll take Rosen. If they're not, they'll stock up and take as many players as they can for the future and trade Eli Manning.
See, that's not true either, I don't think.
I think so.
You talk about them rebuilding. If they're serious for the future, then they'll take the quarterback. If they're serious for the now slash the future, then they take Chubb. But you can't say if they take Rosen, that's not for now, that's for later.
You know why you can't take Chubb? Because people are paying a premium for quarterbacks that won't be around next year and the year after. If you're not going to take a quarterback, you must trade that pick, because there's a boatload of people like Buffalo and Arizona that's willing to give you as many draft picks as you want for that number two pick. So I don't think you can take Chubb at that number two pick either. I don't see how that's possible. I don't know. If you did that, I'd be pretty upset as a Giant fan.
Bottom line, what this deal comes down to is, what do they do with that number two pick? As you have said, I think they should take the quarterback also.
Yes.
But getting rid of JPP frees up the ability to take Chubb, or also to continue to trade and start the rebuilding process, as you've said. But I think the biggest thing is the salary relief that the Giants are going to have. It's only $2.5 million this year, but it's, you know, we're talking about upwards of $10 million in each of the next two seasons after that, and they need that money. You know they want Odell Beckham Jr. They want him because of the star factor, because he's in New York, because he's marketable, and because he's excellent. And they will want Landon Collins, too. I don't know that they can get both. I'd want Collins over Beckham for all the reasons I just said, but they need money available regardless.
If I'm going to make a change of quarterback after this year, Odell Beckham Jr. is not in my plans. I don't need Odell Beckham Jr. for Josh Rosen so they can start clicking 3 years down the line. I'm going to have to start fresh, and I'm sorry, Josh Rosen, you're not going to
so
get him.
So you're setting up failure for Josh Rosen or anybody else that comes in. If
breaking
you get rid
news,
of Beckham, who's left?
Breaking news, there's other wide receivers. And
well, they're going to have to go find him.
And you don't have to get Antonio Brown or a Beckham every time.
Look, in this day and age, with the way the NFL passing games are schematically, I think there's a lot of guys that can be successful.
Yes.
And
for half the price.
For the money. And look, let's remember this, too. Beckham is a small, slight receiver. He's not Julio Jones. He's not A.J. Green. He's not Larry Fitzgerald. A guy that when that initial speed burst goes, they've got the height to compensate and still offer you something in the red zone. When Beckham loses that speed, what is he? And I'm not saying that he's ever going to be terrible. I'm not saying that. But is he going to be worth the money that he is worth at this moment? No, I don't think so. And as Dave Gettleman has proven to you, teams are built from the inside out, not the outside in. The Giants last year tried to build outside in. They got Brandon Marshall, and they were going to have the great three-headed monster at receiver, and they were going to be cute and flashy on offense, and it didn't work. It was ineffective. They were injured also. Look, I would like the Giants to keep Beckham, but I'm telling you, if you can give me one or the other, I'd rather have Collins because that middle of the field is more important than the outside.
I don't know if this has anything to do with this. You read that story about Odell Beckham Jr., and they showed pictures of him partying. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about the one with the cigarette and the white substance. I'm talking about the one in Atlanta. Did you read that story?
I did not.
They had a couple of outlets reporting, here's Odell Beckham Jr. partying in Atlanta. They showed an arrow on the TMZ or whatever the hell it was. That wasn't Odell Beckham Jr. That was a bad report. They're going to sue a lot of outlets. I'm wondering if he gets a bunch of money from that, if it's going to make a difference in his contract negotiations. He's going to seriously sue. There's a lot of people that – you guys didn't see there was a lot of
he's
people.
He's also like, got the richest endorsement deal NFL history last year, like 20
shampoo or whatever.
Like $25 million. Yeah. I think it was shoes.
I don't know if you know, getting the most money, but then again, when you're a wide receiver with an ego like him, you want to be the highest paid in that position. That's for sure. What am I thinking about that?
Real quick, continuing on in the 4-Minute Football Fix. The Patriots re-signed linebacker special teamer Marquise Flowers to a one-year deal. I already know Arnie doesn't care. He'll say, if he was at the Olive Garden, I'd ask him for more breadsticks. Who the hell is Marquise Flowers?
I would ask him for more breadsticks only if I would recognize him. I wouldn't even recognize him for asking for more breadsticks.
Do you care about a special team standout?
No, he's been mud in my world ever since the Corey Clement touchdown in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, that was totally his blown coverage. Whether it was catch or not is insignificant. So, I mean, where does this matter?
I'm interested in this because the Patriots spend more money and invest more money in special teamers than anybody in the league. And now they brought back Matthew Slater.
Right.
They brought back Marquise Flowers. They brought back Brandon Bolden. And Bolden and Slater are getting up there in age. Flowers is still relatively young.
And Patterson, certainly going to help.
Oh, Cordarrelle Patterson. Yeah. Part of the thing that's made the Patriots is so good is their discipline and their ability on special teams. If we can keep that as a constant, Flowers is good to have. And maybe, you know, maybe having Flowers is like having, you know, a good referee, okay? It's better off when you don't know who they are than when you do know who they are. I'm okay that you guys don't know who Flowers is all that much because that means he's done a pretty good job, especially on special teams. And he adds depth at linebacker when I don't know when Dante Hightower's getting hurt again.
I was a lot more excited about Slater being re-signed. I mean, they're dropping guys right and left, important guys, guys that have been with this team for quite a while, know the system, have played well forever. I mean, the Amendolas and so on and so forth. But Slater, man, you can't put a price tag on what he does. He's been a captain of the special teams. He's a Pro Bowler every year. He does a lot of little things that no one else wants to do.
I was going to say on the Tough Fair Tire text line. Go ahead, Rob Brady, real quick.
I was just going to say, Slater is one of the best guys that I've talked to in the NFL. Last few years, you know, I met him 2 years ago at the Super Bowl. He's incredibly bright. He's incredibly engaging. Works with a lot of charitable stuff. I think he won not the Walter Payton Man of the Year, but he won some other award in that similar vein for the Patriots. He's a great guy. I love that. I love having him back, but he's still been in the league for, you know, 7-8 years or so. He was injured, missed half the season last year. I'm glad they didn't overpay for him either, but I like the move to bring Flowers.
Those kind of people matter to Belichick. We can say what you want about him, but guys with integrity matter to that coach.
Alex Moncton said, I love JPP, but the trade was good for the G-men. Get that big contract off the books for an aging player and get a third rounder. Not bad. Zach in Bristol said, Giants need an offensive line or no quarterback will succeed there.
Well, they got Solder for that.
I was going to say.
Vince said, holy cow, Rich makes sense about the Giants. So he wanted to throw in there. And Alex also said, if the Giants take anyone but Rosen, Darnold, or Saquon Barkley at number two, they're grossly overpaying. Have to take one of those or trade their pick. I totally agree on that one. I've said that before a million times. Brady, what is coming up next?
It'll be our daily spring training update. Is the
season started?
1 week?
No?
One week, baby.
I thought it was today.
We get into questions around the Yankees, and A-Rod made his debut today as a broadcaster.
All that's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All All right, Joe, just flying by. Good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. You know, I told you guys I was walking in the lobby just for a second ago, and I saw the boss's credit card on the floor.
What?
The Visa card. The Visa card.
Did you pick it up?
Oh, yes, I picked it up. Yes, I did pick it up.
And it's where now?
It's in my pocket.
Outstanding. Where are we starting tonight?
Where am I starting?
Well, where are we starting?
You're thinking food. I'm thinking furniture. I need some furniture. I need to go shopping. I got some clothes I got to get. What are you kidding me?
How about Toys R Us? You talked about that earlier in the show.
I got to get my kid new hockey stuff. Come on, man. I got a lot to be spending on this.
Wow, is that right?
Could you imagine if we took the credit card and just spent on it and go, well, we saw it in the lobby, so we thought it was good for us to go.
He was clearly just dropping it on the floor as a hint that maybe we should just go out and enjoy ourselves. A little gift from the boss.
I love it. All right, let's go ahead and get to the spring training report. The spring training report.
All right, the Yankees' Aaron Boone talking about the way he's going to put together his lineup this year. Maybe I'm the only dork who really cares about this, but the Yankees have three righties right now slated to be 2, 3, 4 in their order. Judge, 2. Giancarlo Stanton, 3. Gary Sanchez, 4. Aaron Boone's biggest question so far in how he puts together his lineup is, does he need a lefty in there to break up that combo? And I would say yes. I think that this team needs to have Didi Gregorius 3 or 4. If he's going to hit Aaron Judge 2, which it looks like he is, then I think Didi Gregorius has to hit 3.
What was the lineup last year? Judge 2, Gregorius.
Didi hit 4th.
Okay, that's my point. So then who batted 3rd? Because they didn't have a lefty at 3rd, and Judge still had all those home runs.
Judge did hit 3rd part of the year.
Yep.
So is it that? Well, my whole point
because last year they went Ellsbury and Gardner at the top for a while.
Well, I was going to say, then is it that important if he had? Well, you know, what would be a good stat to look up is how many home runs did he have when he was protected by a lefty? You're not going to be able to find that. That's almost impossible.
You'd be surprised.
As protected by a righty. I don't know. Would not that be fascinating to find out when Judge batted 2nd, if there was a lefty next at bat, how many home runs did he have compared to a righty? You know, I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a difference there. I think with those two guys back to back, he's going to see plenty of good pitches.
I mean, if you're looking at Gardner, Judge, Gregorius, Stanton, Sanchez. Yikes.
No. What did you say? Judge?
I put Judge 2nd after Gardner.
Stanton's 3rd.
I'm thinking, so you put Stanton 3rd and then move Gregorius into the 4 slot as opposed to Gregorius in the 3 slot.
Okay, you could do that too.
I mean, either way.
Judge last year when hitting 2nd played 28 games in the 2nd spot of the order, hit 13 home runs. Hitting 3rd, hit 62 games, hit 17 home runs. He hit 330 hitting 2nd and 240 hitting 3rd.
Thus the reason he's hitting 2nd. That's a very large difference.
Yeah, I was going to say he hit more home runs for the most part per bat.
90 points difference on an average from a guy who's not all about the average?
Was a guy last year who struggled to hit breaking balls and struggled chasing high fastballs, struck out a lot. It's going to break the prototypical norms. We think of the 2nd hitter as a guy who slaps the ball around and runs fast and makes contact, and that's going to be shredded here in the sabermetric universe where we're just trying to get Aaron Judge more and more at bats. I guess, Rich, I would go with you then. Stanton, 3, Judge, 2, and put Gregorius at 4. I do think you need to break up the 3 left, the 3 righties.
By the way, what's the worst thing in baseball? Getting thrown out at 2nd on a steal, getting thrown out on 3rd, making the 1st or 3rd, or just striking out? Because I guess strikeout's not a big deal anymore.
Making the 1st or 3rd out at 3rd, I would think, is a big deal.
Striking out isn't a big deal. Striking out used to be a big deal. Now it's
It was sort of that embarrassing thing. You know, the head would go down, and it was the walk of shame back to the dugout.
I wonder how many more strikeouts we have in the league the last 2 years compared to back in the day. I'm sure there's a lot more now.
What's interesting to me, too, is that the Yankees and Red Sox have really the same problem in their order. Right. They're both very, very right-handed dominant, especially in the power positions in the order. You look at the Red Sox and Betts, Bogarts, Martinez, Hanley, all 4 of those guys are right-handed. The Yankees have the same thing. Now, Buster only told us yesterday, he doesn't get too worked up about teams having, you know, about how the Red Sox have 4 lefties in their rotation. I'm not going to get too worked up about this because the caliber of hitters that we're talking about are so good. But I do think if you have the ability to split it up, you should. Why? The Yankees do. The Red Sox don't have as big a luxury.
Why is it harder for a left-handed batter to hit a lefty than a right-handed batter?
Isn't that
to
weird? I know. I always wondered about that. Well, you tell me, Mr. Pitcher. Yeah, is it the arm angle?
I mean, I really think it's just because you see more righties. So righties are used to seeing right-handed pitchers.
Lefties see a lot of lefties when it comes to the major league.
But just watching it on TV.
Yeah, but you don't see as many lefties growing up.
It just looks really tough to pick up, especially the sidewinder left-handers. Yeah, so I mean, how in the world do you hit that stuff?
The ball's coming from practically behind you.
By the way, what did you think of what the Yankees said today? That the Red Sox are the team to beat.
Of course.
I think that sounds pretty typical.
You know what? I would have liked them to just say, you know what? No, we're the team to beat, and they got to worry about us. Have a little... You know, moxie.
That doesn't happen in this day and age.
I was a little surprised because they're not the team to beat. Everybody knows that, so don't pretend like you're the underdog.
Who's not the team to beat?
The Red Sox are not
the team
to beat.
Aren't they the defending AL East champions?
But the Yankees, they should have just said, no, we're the team to beat. We're the one that got better. They got to worry about us. Am I wrong?
No, I think it's dead even. I have, and I don't know when we're making our predictions, but, man, I have no clue right now who's going to win the AL East. Absolutely no idea.
Speaking of that, A-Rod made his debut today on the Sunday Night Baseball crew. He, Buster, Jessica Mendoza, Matt Vasgersian, they were doing spring training. A-Rod talked about the Yankees. I liked a lot of his analysis. I hate A-Rod, but I think he's pretty good.
So you add the NL home run leader to the AL home run leader, Aaron Judge. Throw in Gary Sanchez and Didi Gregorius and on. How would you describe this Yankees lineup?
This is A-Rod.
Well, I mean, they're fierce. You know, the key for them is going to be discipline. If they can really control counts like the 3-2 count, where I know they're looking to improve, they were 12th in the American League last year. They have to have a mentality to pass the baton, and that's what we did so well in 2009. You have to be able to trust your teammates and not try to do it all. And Stanton's in a perfect situation. Unlike Florida, where he was a little bit of a one-trick pony, here he has a supporting cast that makes most teams envious.
A-Rod's my least favorite athlete of all time, but I think he's pretty good. I think he's pretty good. I love that stat about 12th in the league and hitting in 3-2 counts. That's the kind of stuff that I like to hear. So I don't know that the average fan cares about those
kind of stats.
I was about
to say, is that what he said? I fell asleep just then.
But I do.
No, have you ever seen a guy resurrect a career that more than that guy has ever since he left baseball? I mean, he was the public enemy number one. Now everybody loves what he's doing.
All right. Is that our spring training report, Brady?
Yes.
All right. I want to go when we get back. Well, I didn't know it was the end of the spring training.
No, it was our football kickoff special.
Before we get out of here, one of my listeners sent me something so fascinating.
Only your listeners?
Well, it was a quarter of a billion on my weekend show. Okay. Yeah. But it was so fascinating. I wanted to share it with you. I'll see if I can get that in for Last Story Standing. Coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Oh, I'm not going to have time. I was going to give you a whole spiel on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Somebody sent me, it was finished in 1930 last week. That's why there was a whole bunch of stuff going on about it.
Is this going to be a real story unlike your fake?
No, I'm not going to have time, but they do give me a trivia question. You know, when the soldier's guarding the tomb and walks across the tomb, how many steps? This was a question on Jeopardy that all three people missed.
Oh,
and
okay.
Because they came up with the extra hard one. The question was, how many steps does the guard take during the walk across the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers?
How would anyone know that?
And why?
Jeez.
You know what? We all know the answer if you thought about it. I didn't know the answer.
Zero?
No. He walks across. But if you think about it, it's exactly
8.
21. Uh-oh. 4. Why? 21 gun salute.
Okay.
Yeah, you think about it, you can figure out the answer. They all got it wrong. But it was a fascinating story on being a guard and how you can't drink, you can't curse, right. You got to give up your whole life.
Okay.
And there's only 400 of them still in existence. It's crazy.
And
it's amazing, amazing.
And you wonder if they're telling the truth.
Yeah, well.
I heard you watched television last night.
No. You can't watch TV, you can't curse, you can't talk to anybody for 6 months. Brady, tell everybody, no Champagne Valley game night tonight, but tell everybody we're going to be tomorrow.
Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live Farnham Ale and Lager in South Burlington over on Ethan Allen Drive. We'll be there with Max Sugar Shack, our friend. They'll have their great food.
Oh, looking forward to it.
It's going to be a fun Friday, and no Champlain Valley game night tonight because we got the Sweet 16 coming up here in about 30 seconds.
For intern Alec,
And intern Nathan.
Nathan. And in, no, not Nathan. And intern.
Intern Nathan was here.
And intern.
Intern Aaron.
And the
intern
new guy, Aaron. Ryan.
And right. The new guy, Ryan, who we made fun of.
For everybody. For Rich and Brady, I'm Arnie right here on 101.3 ESPN.